Welcome to the Health Fix Podcast, where health junkies get their weekly fix of tips, tools, and techniques to have limitless energy, sharp minds, and fit physiques for life. Hey, health junkies. On this episode of the Health Fix Podcast, I'm interviewing Brit Ann Showman. She is a doctor of physical therapy, and she has a three-step program that can help runners with foot and ankle issues get back to racing without seeing a doctor, doing exercises that don't work, which is common with PT, or wearing orthotics. Now, these are all hot points that I tend to see in my office and have worked with a ton of people on. And Brianne has cracked the code to help people move better, train smarter, run faster, and even longer without pain. Now, I'm starting to sound like a commercial, but hey, Brianne is amazing. I have been talking with her for some time about the foot and ankle issues. And really, in this podcast, she helps me out to really identify how I'm standing on the outside of my feet. And it makes sense for why I have some of the injuries that I do. But more than anything, she brings light to a very, very interesting subject here, our feet. A lot of times we think of pain compartmentalized and we don't realize that our feet are our foundations to the rest of our body. If our feet are off, 9 times out of 10, we're gonna have some pain eventually somewhere else in our body. She even mentions that foot pain can be connected to shoulder pain. How crazy is that, right? Well, nevertheless, I want you to jump in and meet Brianne. She's a wealth of knowledge, but also just a great gal to chat with. And you're going to learn some stuff here about your feet. So let's jump into the podcast. Hey, health junkies. I have Brianne Showman on. And boy, are we going to be talking about some fun stuff. Because, I mean, her website is runwithhappyfeet.com. You got to like check that out. And who can't love that topic? And of course, today, that is what we're talking about, running with happy feet. So Brianne, welcome to the Health Fix Podcast.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here and talk about happy feet.
So a lot of people will have knee injuries. They'll have hip injuries. They'll have back injuries. And every time they go in to get therapy, the focus is on that area. But as you and I know, happy feet make a happy life.
I like that. Yes, absolutely.
I at a young age, and I'm going to bring this into perspective, like just so folks can think about it, I at a young age watched my aunts go through tons of surgeries for Morton's neuromas, like little tumors in their feet. And they would have trouble walking before they have the surgery. They still have trouble walking. And I have Morton's neuromas, but I've not had to have surgery at all because I've had great PTs and I've had great acupuncture into the feet. So anyway, the point being is that I find that everything works better when the feet move better. So you have a similar story where you were going through injuries and injuries as a kiddo and trying to figure out like what in the world is going on. Give us a little background on your story and how you came to working with feet.
Yeah. So I, first actually started with the knee injury, and I wouldn't even say injury, just pain. I played soccer growing up, and after a couple of years started getting some knee pain. And I did what, you know, any athlete does. They get the knee brace, that little neoprene sleeve, and helps keep track the kneecap and quote unquote problem solved. Continued on, played soccer all the way, traveling team through high school. But then, primarily in high school, I got into cross country and track. Didn't really wear the knee brace anymore there because at that point it's like, oh, there's these amazing things called stability shoes, and somehow it solved the problem. Once again, in quotes, solve the problem. So I ran with stability shoes, and it's really funny. I was actually writing something this past weekend. And I vaguely remember actually getting some like over the counter inserts in them too, at some point. And I don't remember when that was, but I vaguely remember this, and I had forgotten about that fact. But so I had that. Well, then we get into a couple more years of high school and I start getting shin splints. And I tape the shin splints and I ice them and I do all the things, and they eventually just kind of fade away. Well, then my senior year of cross country, I start getting pain in my foot, took me out of a couple meets. And then we weren't really getting any, I was going to therapy. We weren't really getting any answers. So I just kept running. Well, end of season came, wasn't getting any better. And I had a stress fracture in my foot. So I had to take some time off. going to college, ended up during, I think it was track season of college, ended up getting another stress fracture. Continued, left the team, just wanted a change of pace, started doing the marathon, half marathon thing, started getting knee pain again. So the therapist, I worked with a physical therapy clinic at the time, the therapist I worked with gave me some things for runner's knee. So got that under control, was good to go. Fast forward a couple more years, PT school, ended up with another stress fracture. This one I'm assuming was there. I never went in to get it diagnosed, but at this point I'm like, okay, it's tender in this one little area and not anywhere else. Probably stress fracture, probably should just stop running for a bit. So I did.
Man.
So then I, once I became a PT, you know, I was the normal, I was the standard PT that just like treat the injury site, cause that's what we learned in PT school. Well, then these things called Vibram 5-finger running shoes came on the market, and my curious little PT brain said, I'm going to try these out and see what happens. So I did. And within a few months, I was like, my knee, I had no knee pain with running. I was no longer wearing, oh, I had also had orthotics because a bad ankle sprain put me into a podiatrist's office, putting into surgery. And then naturally I was put in orthotics because that's what they do. So I was also wearing orthotics at the time. So within a couple months of wearing the Vibrams, which for those of you who don't know, they're basically barefoot running shoes. I was out of no more knee pain, no more orthotics, no more stability shoes. And I've not had any chronic injuries since. And that was back probably about 15 years ago now.
Wow. Wow. You know, I remember like the 5-finger Vibrams when they first came out and everyone was like, what in the world? Those look so weird. They're so strange. And, you know, all of us were like, all right, that were runners. I guess we got to try it, you know, because like you said, there is this concept of these built up shoes, you know, and anyone who's ever been to a running store, they're always going to ask you, do you pronate? And you might be like, I have no idea what that means, but they'll be like, yeah, you do. Totally. Here's your shoe for it. And now you've got these really thick soled shoes that you don't know what they're doing to you. And this is when often I'll have people come in to see me, cause they'll be like, hey, I got these new shoes at the fancy running store. Now everything hurts. And then you're like, huh? So what do you do to evaluate a foot? And guys, Brianna works virtually to do this, which is super cool because this is one of the biggest issues that I have with the physical therapy industry is that we have a lot of folks that'll go in for PT and they'll get the standard, like you said, treat the area, not the whole body type of treatment. And the folks who do that are so busy. I can struggle to get folks in for months sometimes. So seeing someone virtually, it's like, boom, you can see them. You don't have to travel long distances. And it's amazing. So tell us how you evaluate the foot and the ankle here, guys. I kind of honed in on the foot, but the ankle is also what Brianne's looking at for folks as well. So tell us kind of how does an eval look to look at that foot and see what's going on versus just being like, yeah, your foot looks like you need a shoe that for pronators. I swear that's been the like constant statement no matter what. Someone can have the highest arch ever and I'm like, it doesn't work.
But yeah. Absolutely. And that's a great question as far as what an assessment or what I'm looking at. So when I'm looking at someone, I'm looking like I'll just have them stand with both feet on the ground and first and foremost, like have like them assess for themselves, where do you feel the weight on your foot? Is it on the front? Is it on the back? Is it the outside? Is it the inside? Is it equal? Like everyone has somewhere where they just habitually like to be. So first and foremost, we want to figure out where that is. And figure out like, is that where the ideal part of the foot is, or are we somewhere where we're creating these compensations and these faults? So from there, we bring them to what we call the tripod of the foot. Your tripod of your foot is your heel, just behind your big toe and just behind your small toe. Just like the tripod of a camera, we want equal distribution on all three points. So if someone's not there, I teach them how to get to that point and learn how to like do things in that point essentially. And really like start to understand the difference of between where they like to be and where this is, so we can start to create new patterns and new habits in the brain. From there, we look at toe dexterity. Can they isolate by lifting just their big toe up? Can they take all their toes up, and can they take just their big toe down? How is that control of the big toe? Like, and you know, I always get the question of like, why does this matter? Like, I don't need to grab things like we do with our thumbs. The big toe, okay. Do we need to raise it up individually on its own and lower individually on its own in daily life? Probably not. But what we do need to do is make sure we know how to control ourselves on our big toe when we are walking and when we are running. If we don't do that, a lot of issues happen up the chain up through that leg. So once we check that out, then I always look at what does single leg control look like? When we're walking, at some point, we're going to be on a single leg. When we're running, we are either on no legs or we are on one leg. We are never on both legs at the same time when running. So if we don't have good single leg control, then that's going to be a big factor as well. And so I'll also look at like, okay, when you're on a single leg, what is that foot doing? How much work is it doing? What compensations is someone doing? And really getting a good understanding of what's happening with that foot and ankle area when they're doing different movements, even just standing in place, to really figure out what do we need to address going forward.
Nice. So I've just been doing this, of course, as you've been talking, because I love to play with that, because you can't just tell me like, okay, see where you put all your tripod. So for me, I actually have extremely high arches. So my folks, just to give you a little perspective as to what you might feel here, I can feel more of my pinky toe area and my heel, but I don't feel my great toe as much. You guys might feel something completely different. So I find this fascinating. And then Bree was talking about like lifting the big toe up and then lifting the little toes up. I can't do it independently on my right foot. This is my foot that has more of the pain and has the bigger of the neuromas. And so I'm like, all right, I like this. And then I did the stand on one foot, and that feels interesting too, because I feel like I almost collapse in on standing on the one foot. So folks, I hope that you tried this while Bree was talking about it. If you didn't, pause, rewind, do it again, because it is eye-opening, because you're like, oh, wow, things aren't as balanced as I thought they were down there. Okay, keep going. What's next? What do we do next?
Yeah, so from there, I'd like to also see where continuing up the chain a little bit, because like you said, like you introed it, what happens at the knee, what happens at the hip all plays into the foot. So we want to see, I'll just look at like what's happening when someone does a squat. Mm-hmm. Do the knees fall in? Do they stay out? Like what's happening at the foot? Where's the weight distribution on the foot? What's happening there? From there, I'll have them do a jump squat. So it's a little bit more dynamic. Their body has less time to prepare. That's going to be more similar to what's happening when someone's running or walking, where we don't have a lot of time to prepare for that movement. We just have to know how to respond. And that movement can be different than what happens when we have time to prepare for it. And then I'm going to look at two different single leg activities. I'm going to look at a reverse lunge, mm-hmm, to see what happens there, because a lot of times we can see what changes between the foot, hip, and ankle with that. And I'm going to look at a single leg partial squat. So we no reason that for you CrossFitters that we need to do like a full depth pistol, anything like that. But running is essentially a series of partial single leg squats over and over again. So if we don't have good control with that, then we're not going to have good control of that going forward either. So I'm always going to check to see what's going on with that as well.
Oh, partial single leg. Okay. So you blew my mind twice with running. One, I never thought about the fact that I might have no legs on the, like nothing's on the ground, like no feet on the ground at any particular time. That's cool in a way. I'm like, wow, I never thought about that. Then when you just said running is a partial squat, I think for a lot of people, I mean, let's put it this way, and correct me if I'm wrong here, but it seems like a lot of people just jump into running because they're like, all right, you know, this is a great exercise. That's where I see people kind of slim out and you know, lose some weight. But if we don't have the strength in our feet to help keep everything else balanced, never mind the adductors, never mind, you know, core, this and that, if the feet aren't working properly, how are we even going to be able to do a partial squat if we don't even know where we are in space?
Yeah. And that's a great, you know, it's a big reason I think a lot of runners do get injured is you know, someone wants to get into running, they get some clothes, they get some running shoes, and they head out the door, never figuring out, am I even, do I have the strength for this? Do I have the control for this? Do I, like, from the, all the way from the foot to the top of the body, like, do I have the good strength and control for it? And what have I done to prepare my body for that? So that's a huge factor. The other factor, and the reason I am very like anti-shoes as much as possible, is anytime we do get put shoes on, it shuts our feet down. It doesn't, most shoes, minimalist shoes are going to be a little bit different, but majority of shoes are going to shut the feet down when we're in them. So if we already have weak feet, we're in shoes all day, we're in shoes when we run, we're just basically, or essentially making our feet weaker and weaker every single day, unless we actually do things to take care of that and address that. So, I definitely understand. I was that runner too, that when I started getting cross country in high school, it's like, all right, let's just go get some shoes and start putting in my mileage, so I'm ready for the season. And it's what I see from most people, and I totally get it, but it is a reason that a lot of injuries do happen.
Sure. No, I mean, it makes perfect sense. And yeah, same thing. I was like, running, oh, cool, let me do that. I'm, you know, biking, sure, I'll just jump on, no problem. I mean, CrossFit, let's do this. Nothing, you know, I didn't prepare for anything. And no wonder that there are a list of injuries that happen, you know, but I think just in general for folks with everyday life, part of one of the things that I think gets overlooked so much is just the fact that our feet become weak. Like you said, I once had someone say a shoe's like a little shoe coffin, and it pretty much like is, yep, your feet are dying slowly because they're not getting that energy they need. I love to be barefoot. I'm pretty much barefoot all the time. I can't run barefoot though. That is I tried it, like when it first came out, my friends and I were like, let's do this. I can't even walk on gravel without shoes on. I mean, I'm like, ow, ow, ow. So it's not a jam for me, but minimalist shoes I like them a lot, but I think maybe a lot of people are wondering like, what does that really mean? Can you give us a little bit of an explanation of a minimalist shoe compared to say something like a Saucony or something that's built up a little bit more specifically for running?
Yeah. And I do want to back up just a little bit to your barefoot comment. I'm not saying that everyone should be able to run barefoot by any means. And obviously I'm like not going to go out in 100 some degree weather here in Phoenix when the asphalt's 150, 180 to go and run outside barefoot. Like that's just dumb. But like I may go to the park in the grass and run barefoot there. But with that said, our feet are, we have more sensory nerves on the bottom of our feet than the rest of our body. So, which means they're very sensory. They really love to be like, feel the earth, feel things. Also means they get really sensitive if they aren't used to doing that. So like the more you do put yourself in the situations where it's like walking on dirt roads, walking on some asphalt, on something like a little more like sensory based, the more your feet will get used to that. Just as an example, I had a bad injury a few years ago, was put in a boot for 8 weeks, had some PRP. Got out of the boot, went out to go paddleboarding. Getting on my paddleboard, like walking through those rocks, killed my feet just from 8 weeks of being in the boot. Like my feet were that sensitized. So, but then after getting out of the boot and being barefoot again, like that went away pretty fast. So the feet learn pretty fast, just like your hands and the rest of your body does, to like tolerate those things, but it can take time.
You know, it's interesting you mentioned that, because a lot of people, if they have plantar fasciitis, I know I've seen with my in-laws, neither one of them wants to go barefoot ever because they find that their feet are so sensitive. With injuries, anything in general with sensitive feet, do you recommend your folks like getting out and like walking in the grass, like you were saying, walking on a dirt road and try it out, or go to the beach and walk on some rocks and just do that as a practice and just grin and bear it? Or how do you do it? Like
it's basically building up the tolerance and the roughness of the surfaces. So starting in your home, on your carpet and your tile floors, and then like soft grass can be awesome. Maybe the beach where it's soft sand, which that also gives yourself a secondary workout, because that sand is really tough to walk in. But a lot of times like that sand is, or at least depending on the beach, that sand can be like really fine, really soft. And then from there, maybe like a dirt road and where it's a little bit more gravelly, that sort of thing. And just kind of working yourself up. Like you don't need to go necessarily walk across the sharp rocks. That's not necessary unless you want to, you can. But at least getting more tolerant to some of those surfaces can be really helpful.
So I think a lot of people might be thinking now, like, okay, that's cool, but what if I have a foot injury? Or what if I have an ankle? And I think we definitely want to transition to talking a little ankle stability and things of that nature too. But what if someone has like a current foot injury? Maybe they have like a displaced bone or something. I call it a loosey-goosey bone. Some people tend to have these in the foot. You can tell me what the common term is for that, but it seems that some people will end up having pain in the foot as the bones go in and out of alignment and things of that nature. So I'm gonna let you take over because you are the expert in this department, and I'm gonna start sounding like not cool. I'm gonna stop on the head with this
one. Fair enough. So yeah, if we already have foot issues going on, you know, everyone wants, you know, the quick answer as far as, well, I have plantar fasciitis, so what do I do for it? I have Achilles tendonitis, what do I do for it? As if there's just one solution. And it really comes down to kind of like I was mentioning what I do in that assessment. A lot of it comes down to what's happening there. If you are always on the outside of your foot, okay, what do we need to do to get your body to learn and be controlled and be stable on that tripod? If your arch is collapsed and you overpronate all the time, what do we need to do to gain that control? And there's a lot of different things we can do for that, but it's really learning to gain control of your foot. Because until you gain control of your, if you don't gain control of your foot, I should say, then nothing else you do is really going to matter. You can do all the massage, soft tissue work, e-stim, ultrasound, shockwave, et cetera, you name it. But if you don't learn how to get control of your foot, all those issues are just going to come back in a few months.
That makes sense. That makes sense because yeah, I mean, yes, I can do needles. It works for, you know, a while and I haven't had, you know, tons of issues with pain, but yeah, I can still feel just from how we started the podcast out that I still am very, very dominant on the outside of my foot, outside of my heels even. So, you know, folks who are listening, I want you to make sure you did that just as a base, just to see, because I think it's very fascinating when you know. So how does ankle stability play into this? Because I've been told over and over again to work on my right ankle stability because that one seems to lock up. It is one that I've sprained, I can't tell you how many times over the years, and I know I'm not unique. There's plenty of people that have sprained their ankles. Tell us a little bit about ankle stability and kind of just tie in, if you will, to the folks that have multiple ankle sprain kind of issue.
Yeah. So the ankle is an interesting joint because it technically needs to be, the way the body works is we alternate basically mobile and stable areas of the body. So technically the ankle needs to be a mobile joint, because of the amount of motion it needs and the things it needs to be able to do. Like if you think about like forward and backward, side to side and all the movements it does. So it does need to be a very mobile joint, but mobile joints also need to have good control of them too. So we do need that stability. The reason I bring up that mobility factor is because a big issue with a lot of injuries is we don't have enough ankle, what we call dorsiflexion, that foot coming up towards you, or that being able to like get into that good, when that leg's behind you, having that, being in that good position. And if we don't have that, then we can't get good hip extension. We can't get a lot of other things. So we create a lot of other injuries. And a lot of people are in limited ankle dorsiflexion. So we do want to make sure we have enough mobility in the ankle in the areas that we need the mobility. But also if you do have a lot of ankle sprains or history of other things, we need to make sure we get it stable as well, because once those ligaments are torn at all, they aren't going to regrow. So we need the muscles and the tendons to support those areas. So, doing things, you know, anything on, when it comes to foot and ankle, anything on a single leg is going to be super helpful for getting any ankle stability. And then from there, it depends on how severe it is, what your abilities are right now, and then how we progress from a more dynamic perturbation, like change of movement, change of direction, exercises in order to really address where the weaknesses are.
Wow. I never thought about your ankle dorsiflexion as related to your hip. And in particular, you're saying hip extension, right? Did I get that right?
Yeah. So if you, there's a lot of other running faults that happen, but just kind of to kind of visualize this, if you don't have good ankle dorsiflexion, you essentially can't get into that toe off position. Mm-hmm. So either you're going to shorten your stride because you're just going to stop yourself from going any further forward. So you're going to shorten your stride, not get your hip extension. So once there, we get your weak glute issue because your glute can't fire if it can't get hip extension. But also, like, if you've ever seen someone, like, just seeing those people you've seen, like, walking or running where their, like, heel kind of flips inward a little bit, a lot of that's a compensation because you don't have dorsiflexion. So we do this little whip to get around it. We go on the inside of the toe. We create bunions because of this and cause a lot of slew of other issues when we don't have that good dorsiflexion.
Bunions. Let's talk bunions for a second. I think a lot of people think that it is hereditary and there's nothing that can be done besides the cut down surgery. So shed some light on bunions again. So you're talking about it and guys, I can sort of visualize it, but I'm thinking like almost like a swing hip, like that kind of swings around. Is that what you're talking about when someone's walking or even running?
That could be one of the compensations. There are several compensations that happen because the dorsiflexion or lacking it.
Okay. All right, folks, if you're hearing this and you got bunions and they're causing pain and interfering with your running or, you know, any physical activity, definitely we need to think about this before you head to surgery. Because I'll be honest, with surgery, and you've probably seen the same thing, Fran, I never see that foot move well again. And then now I have people coming in and it's ankle, knee, back pain that starts after that surgery. Because a lot of people get even hardware in there.
Actually there's a physician here locally who, she's a foot and ankle specialist and I follow her. She puts a ton of great stuff on Instagram. Her name's Emily Spleichel. She just put a great one on bunions out yesterday. And where a lot of the disconnect is made is like, we have this little, like the toe goes one way, we have this area. So a lot of times when surgeries happen, they just go shave off that bump. The problem is the bunion is essentially, or that bone is essentially the head of the metatarsal sticking out because the joints are no longer lined up and they're at an angle. So all you do is shave that bone and you don't like actually realign that joint, you're not going to get any better. And a lot of the reason we have the bunion itself is because one side of the toe, the muscle on the side of the toe, it basically is giving more of a pull than the other side. So we have a stronger muscle on one side, a weaker one on the other. So it's pulling the toe in. So if we can do things to teach that toe how to work better before there's major joint changes because of that increased rubbing, we can resolve a lot of these issues without surgery.
Nice. Okay. So that leads us to talking about your foot and ankle program that you have. And in particular, like who is a good fit for a program like this? Because I think a lot of people are thinking like, okay, I'm used to going into PT, I'm used to going to massage or acupuncture, you know, body therapy. And they're like, wait a minute, how do I know if I'm a good candidate to try something online and get some results? So let's talk about your program and talk a little bit more about like who's a good fit, who isn't, and kind of where that line goes.
Yeah. So it's definitely not for everyone. Definitely not for everyone right at the beginning of injury necessarily. Cause at times, like there are times that people do need maybe PRP, prolotherapy, shockwave, dry needling, that hands-on stuff. Obviously I can't do that virtually. So there are times that we need that. Plus, I love to work with the ones who it's like, you've tried all the things already. You've gone to therapy. You've worked with coaches. You've done who knows how many Google searches and YouTube searches and asking friends on what to do and haven't found any answers and still like 3 months, 6 months, 12 months later, you're still dealing with issues. Like when I see you've tried all this stuff, it tells me someone really just hasn't figured out mechanically wise the way your body's moving that's creating these injuries. And that's when it gets really fun, because we can really dive into like, what is your body doing? And most often, once we start like cleaning up that stuff, within weeks, like pain is gone.
Nice. That's awesome. So we're talking chronic foot and ankle injuries, guys. And we're talking about ones that, you know, you're kind of the mystery in the office. Is that what you're getting at? Like, you like to sleuth out these kind of mysteries as to like, what in the world is going on here?
Yes. Those are the fun ones.
Yes. Yes. And, you know, I think it's really important to have someone on board in this department, because so much of the PT world, a lot of folks will go in, they'll have the eval by the doc PT or the PT, and then they go right to assistants. And there's never another eval, or not never, but it's for weeks. And, you know, I think the other side of this is the homework. When you have a program and you have someone who's working one-on-one with you, or group setting, and in your case, it's a group setting, yes?
Yeah.
Okay. And your evals, do you do your evals group too, or how do you do that?
No, that first call is a one-on-one call. So I can really dive into what's happening from a movement standpoint.
Good. No, that's great for folks to hear, because now they know they've got your personal attention for the eval. And then after that, someone's holding them accountable for their homework. And I think this is where there's that missing link. I was just talking to my uncle this morning, and he's like, yeah, my PT really didn't work until I did my exercises 3 times a day. I'm like, okay, 3 times a day might be a little excessive, but why didn't you do them before? Because I thought when I went to PT, that's when I was getting my work. And it's like, okay. So let's talk to folks about how important it is to have accountability and someone, you know, working with you along the way on the PT. You know, how much have you seen an impact in terms of your results being able to do the group program style?
Yeah, you know, it kind of depends. Like, some people do absolutely need that accountability to stick with it. In my mind, though, the kind of the way I view it, and even when I've asked people, when they have, like, people who haven't worked with me that have stopped doing their exercises, is a lot of them, they did them for a week or two and weren't noticing any changes and weren't ever given any new exercises to do. And I think that's where a big disconnect is that, like, do people get lazy? Does life get in the way at times? Absolutely. But I think more times than not, like, if we truly want to get better, we're going to do things that help us get better. Like, if I had exercises to do and they weren't helping me, I can't say I would continue doing them for weeks on end. Like, that seems dumb. And so I think more times than not, people are given exercises that are kind of quote unquote cookie cutter for foot pain, knee pain, hip pain, whatever it is. But no one's really like looked as like, are you even doing this exercise right? Are you compensating through your normal patterns as you do this exercise? Is it even a foot strength issue, or is it actually a hip strength issue? Like, are you collapsing? And there's so many factors that play a role that I think a lot of things are missed. A lot of people are given the wrong exercises to do. They don't help. And so they naturally just kind of fall off course.
That makes sense. I mean, and that's kind of what I hear from my patients. I think the other big one is like, they gave me these exercises, they all hurt, so I didn't do them. Mm-hmm. And then it's like, okay, let's ask why, or ask to switch them. And obviously I know you're going to be working, you know, with someone, if it hurts, all right, you're going to figure out the next step and where to go from there. Now, I think another big thing that folks might be wondering about, because you gave us such good information in the beginning here with like how to do a quick assessment and be like, oh, maybe I do need some work here. What is one thing folks can do right now to just strengthen their feet or their ankles or both, just on like a general health basis? Like, what is like a really good thing for anyone and everyone to be doing to work on their their foot and ankle health?
You know, honestly, at a very basic level, just being barefoot more, especially if you're used to being in shoes all the time, all day, every day, or, you know, you said it too, or you said, and I call them too, shoes as well, they're foot coffins. But then I like to call the socks foot mittens. Like, think about how well you function if you're wearing mittens. Like, you can't do anything with your hands. You usually have to take them off to like turn a key or do things. Well, that's essentially what a sock is doing as well. Obviously, during the winter months, cold tile floors, things like that, you do like may want to wear socks. But if you can be barefoot, like barefoot is awesome. The other thing that I think is often overlooked is your toes, because they're in shoes, are very scrunched together. Normal feet toes should have space between them. And not that they need to have like this ginormous space at all times, but we should be able to get it there and we should have space. The more compressed the toes are, the more compressed all those bones in the foot are, the decreased blood supply we have through there, the tighter muscles we have, the less our foot can function. So getting toe spacers and starting to use those can be super helpful as well for just a healthier foot in general.
Interesting. You know, I had a friend give me like a whole bag of them. I guess he bought like 4,000 or something. I don't know. He got a lifetime supply, I'm pretty sure, of foot spacers. And he gave me this huge bag of them. And I'm like, okay, cool. But here's the crazy part. I realized that even with the shoes that I had, that I thought I had a good space for my toes, putting the toe spacers in, I couldn't wear my shoes. So I was like, whoa. And I have duck feet, like full on disclosure, folks. Like, my feet are duck feet. They're size 4.5. I don't know what happened in my world. I have tiny feet and they're 4.5, and finding shoes is crazy. So really the only ones that I could wear with the toe spacers were jeans. Like, I couldn't get my foot in. So I'm like, huh. And so I played around trying to find other shoes and I really haven't had great success. So for a lot of folks who might have duck feet like me, any recommendations on brands to look for us wide foot toe space needing folks?
Yeah. You know, this is actually a really good segue back to the conversation that we never did have that we started to, which is the minimalist shoes.
Yes.
So with minimalist shoes, you know, you look at them, they're very bendy, they're very flat, there's no cushioning in them, which allows your foot to work more naturally. The other beauty of them is the toe box is like a normal foot. So if you look at the toe box of most shoes, it goes up, like it gets narrower towards the top. Whereas if you look at minimalist shoes, it keeps us very like wide at the part of the top of the foot, which is what we need. Because technically, as we go to a toe-off position, we do like the toes and that front of that foot should expand a little bit. So anytime we're wearing regular shoes, it's not going to let that happen. So minimalist shoes are great for allowing that toe expansion. The awesome thing is a lot of the companies now are coming out with fashion style shoes, work boots, shoes, like winter boots, all like, it's really cool as far as like all the different styles and functionality of the shoes now. Obviously if you work in a job where you need steel toe shoes, things like that, wear your like protective shoes, do that. But if you work in a job that's like they even have men's dress shoes, like type shoes. So like, unless you need that like steel toe type protection, almost any job, anything you do, you can wear the minimalist shoes for. With that said, continue working on your foot strength for them, because they do make your foot and that lower leg work more than you're used to. So you may get a little bit of soreness in there. And then from a running standpoint, if you absolutely don't like being able to like feel everything under the ground, or you live in a very rock, like I go trail running, I cannot wear my minimalist shoes because it just bruises my feet too much. Ultra is a great option for that, because they kept a wide toe box in their shoes and do make it more natural to the foot.
Nice. Yes. Those are great shoes. I do like those as well. So, all right, perfect. Now folks know what they can do if they've got duck feet like me and can't get their feet in the spacers in their, you know, I was struggling with my New Balance minimalists. I couldn't get them in there. And then CrossFitters, Nobles, what the heck? It pulled my toenail off and Nobles are popular. For those of you out there, Noble shoes are kind of like this cross. It started as a CrossFitter fad. Now it's kind of going to everybody. But if you have a wide foot, they do not have a lot of flex in there. And I think it's made obviously for lifting. But I don't know if you found that. I just had to make a side note on that.
Yeah. You know, I've never worn them. I've heard they're a very stiff shoe from the people I talk to. And like, I know a lot of people who can't, like, if there's a running workout, they can't wear them, or they get really bad shin splints if they wear them during running workouts. But yes, they are a very stiff shoe.
I have left them for just lifting at this point. Cause I mean, I spent the money on them. I'm kind of like one of those people that's like, you know, those, I'm going to wear them until they wear out now. But for those of you who are listening, they are very stiff shoe, and they can cause trouble with walking. I really do think that they should be left to lifting if that is the case. And, you know, sorry, Noble, but that's just the way it works. It's great for people who need to lift weight, but I digress. So we want folks to make sure they can find you. And I mentioned runwithhappyfeet.com, and folks, that is her way to take a look at the you have a free masterclass, right? And that's what the runwiththehappyfeet.com gets them to, right? So they can learn more about you, learn more about your skills and things.
Yes, that is correct. That is for my masterclass.
Perfect. And then your regular website is getyourfixpt.com.
Correct.
All right. I got it. So folks, write those down, pay attention there. And then Dr. Bree also has,
that works too.
She's got a podcast called the Highly Functional Podcast, and she was so kind enough to have me on last week. We did the recording
last week. Yeah.
So you guys want to check that out too. And the Highly Functional Podcast, I'm going to have you explain yourself as I'm trying to do it here and doing all goofy things. So tell folks, who's the Highly Functional Podcast for, and give them a little breakdown there so that they can get to know you a little bit more and kind of learn more about Bree's thoughts on life.
Awesome. So my ultimate mission and passion is to help people become highly functional humans and athletes. So on my podcast, we break everything down. A lot of those myths and things you've been led to believe all these years by media, mass marketing, physicians, you name it. We break it all down to really dive into like what the kind of the truth behind it, if nothing else, gets you thinking differently about things, because it's very different from a lot of things that you've probably heard from other people, from things you've read. So it really gets you thinking differently. And I cover all aspects of fitness and wellness. So nutrition, we talk like workout stuff, we talk running technique, mindset, you name it, we kind of cover it. But it really does, like, my whole purpose of it is just really get you thinking differently and realizing that if you are not finding success or results like you want, there's probably a reason for it. And it may take an outside the box direction of thinking.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I love it. Now, you have a 12-week program, and ultimately that is what you guys run with happyfeet.com is leading into her lovely masterclass that talks about her program. And I want you to tell folks about the 12-week program and how you're helping folks with the chronic foot and ankle injuries get better.
Yeah. So the 12-week program is called the Empowered Runner Program. And that's really what I want the end result to be of it, is that by the time you are through the program, you have gone from being in pain back to running. And now you understand how to be a resilient runner, how to continue without constantly getting injured all the time, really knowing how to understand and read your body and, you know, help you just be more a better athlete. The beauty of it is most people get into it because they have these chronic injuries and want to get past them, but halfway through, all of a sudden they're running faster than they've ever run before, because we're not only getting rid of pain, but we're teaching their foot how to work better, which gives them more power, more speed, more agility, all that fun stuff.
That, I mean, let's put it this way. I will have ladies come into my office all the time saying to me, I can't run anymore because my knee, or because this, because that, I'm gaining weight, I feel crappy, you know, and I'm, you know, it's taken my zest for life, but also taken my sanity, right? Because so many people use running for working out those issues in the brain. I mean, I know I do. So I find this empowered running program, I like the title of it, because it brings back that zest, because I feel like so many women as they get older lose that when they can't run anymore.
Yeah, absolutely. Like it, you know, it's defeating for any runner, any athlete to be told they can't do what they love anymore, you know? And I think, and I work primarily with runners, so that's kind of where my, kind of who I talk to, but like as a runner, that's what you identify as, that's who you are. And so when you don't have that anymore, it can change a lot. When you're told you can't run anymore and you just need to give it up, and, you know, because of you have knee pain or you have foot pain, like maybe 1% of the population, that might be an accurate answer, but the majority of the population, that is not the answer. And there's typically is another reason, but, yeah, to be told you can't run anymore, that there's no solution, is very defeating, very frustrating. And it does cause people to lose their identity. And yeah, it's so powerful to help people realize like there are other answers.
Yes, that is so true. And that's kind of the mission I'm on, is keeping folks active and keeping them going. And so they, you know, don't give up on life. That's ultimately where we want folks to be. So that, I mean, guys, check out her program, Empowered Runner Program. Check out her masterclass at runwithhappyfeet.com. I think it's something that is well worth your time to see if it's a good fit for you. Your feet are so important. I can't stress it enough. And I know that you're in the same boat as me. If your feet aren't happy, you're not happy.
Absolutely.
Well, Bree, thank you so much for coming on. I really appreciate it. And I look forward to doing another one here soon so that we can talk more about impact on the rest of the body with the feet. Because I think I could probably talk to you for like 4 hours on these things. And I really want folks to understand how important it is to understand the connection between feet and whole body pain.
Yeah, I would love to get back on and to dive into all those topics. It'd be great.
Let's do it. Thanks for coming on.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Hey, fellow health junkie. Thanks for listening to the Health Fix podcast. If you enjoyed tuning in, please help support me to get the word out about the podcast. Subscribe, rate, and review, and just get that word out. Thanks again for listening.